from WXXI News. This is Education Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. There's our music. I can hear it now. Oh, it is Friday, isn't it? And our connection for this segment is going to be made this coming Thursday, when the year of the sheep or goat or ram arrives on the Chinese calendar. It recently occurred to me that I know next to nothing about Chinese tradition and the meaning of their new year. So my guest for this half hour is here to educate us. Mary Chow, writer for the Democrat and Chronicle. She's got a story that's going to run 1 week from today about Chinese New Year food traditions, superstitions, culture, even maybe navigating local grocers. Is that right, Mary?
Yeah, that's a lot.
All right. So we've got plenty to talk about: food, tradition, culture, and the year of the sheep and the goat. Turns out I am a sheep or a goat. So I guess if you are born in, you are a horse?
I'm a horse.
You're a horse.
Evan just found out today, right now, that he's a goat.
I'm a goat or a sheep. And and Mary informed me that you don't really want to be a sheep. And I said, that's sort of sad to hear that.
For people who are superstitious, the Chinese are very superstitious. If you adopt to old traditions and you're the sheep, sheep people are wonderful, lovely people, but there's also docile. They tend to be followers. Not you, Evan, no. I sense leadership skills in you.
Yeah, I'm the outlier sheep, I guess. Now, honest question then. Is that more of a fun superstition, or will there be fewer births this year?
There probably will be
fewer
births.
They really will.
In Asia, they take their astrological signs seriously. Astrological as in the animal signs. Mm-hmm. The Chinese take their superstitions very seriously.
So your horse, there are a dozen that get rotated?
Yes, a dozen animals that get rotated. But I'm a bad horse for a woman. I'm a fire horse. There are five elements. Once every 60 years, the fire horse rolls around, and fire horses are supposed to be untamable. And which is a bad thing for a female. For a guy, it's totally
I don't
fine.
Know. This sounds like a feminist dream.
Ah, yes, yes.
Power but, woman can't be tamed.
But apparently in 1966, when they actually tracked the birth rates in Japan, it fell 25% year of the fire horse.
Wow. So that really is... It's viewed with some level of seriousness.
Exactly.
How fascinating. Mary Chow's here. And for the Democrat and Chronicle, a week from today, your piece on Chinese New Year traditions is going to focus on, I guess,
food.
This and more. And food.
Food. Yes. Food. It's all about food. Chinese New Year is pretty much Christmas and Thanksgiving and 4th of July, every major holiday rolled into one. It is the biggest holiday of the year for many East Asians. And it's a 15-day celebration in Asian countries. When I was in Taiwan, businesses literally shut down for 15 days, and you would just visit friends and family and have lots of yummy foods. And if you are a child, basically children get envelopes stuffed with money, which is great. Instead of presents, we get money.
Children get money.
Yes.
So you grew up in Taiwan.
Yes.
And so you remember that red envelopes?
Red envelopes with money.
And where do you get, they hand them to you?
You go to your friend's house. You spend pretty much 2 weeks visiting people. New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, you spend with your family. And the rest of the 15-day period, you visit friends and family, and you go to people's homes, and they all have to give the children some money. And it's all a matter of showing face. The more money you give, the more prosperous you seem. So it's great for the kids. You collect a lot of money by the end of the 2 week period.
Probably some pressure for the adults.
That's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of social pressure, keeping up with the Joneses and having to give enough to show that you're indeed prosperous.
But that's still the case today, that these traditions?
Yes. There are a lot of superstitions. I remember growing up, there are things you couldn't do on New Year's during the whole New Year period of 3 to 4 or 5 days. You can't wash your hair because you'll wash away bad luck. You can't sweep the house because you'll sweep away bad luck. And you're supposed to eat certain foods for good luck, like the fish, which means plenty to eat in the New Year. And you're supposed to have a lot of noodles. Noodles mean long life. So those are certain things you do during the New Year to bring about prosperity. And then you're supposed to forgive all of your past transgressions in the last year and just start anew.
So the Chinese New Year arrives this coming Thursday, right?
This Thursday, February 19th.
For the Asian community in Rochester, maybe not 15 days of celebration, but is it viewed similarly? And do you still?
Oh, yes. People here do celebrate a lot of my Chinese friends here, they just go over to each other's homes. Their friends are like extended family. There's not as much of a large Chinese community here in the Rochester area. And then the area restaurants, they all host celebrations. For example, next Sunday, the 22nd, I'll be going to Shanghai. They have a traditional lion dance to celebrate the new year. A couple of restaurants do that, Shanghai and also New Cantonese, which is at 85 Commerce Drive in Henrietta. Many of the Chinese restaurants, such as Royal Dynasty, Chen Garden, they all have special Chinese menus during this time of the year. And then the grocery stores have a lot of special treats. You have the candy trays. You have to have a lot of sweets in the new year. It's like Halloween, too. Rolled into the holiday because sweets means you'll have a sweet year. So there are certain foods you can't have, like bitter melon, because you're not supposed to have anything bitter for the new year.
Bitter melon?
Bitter melon. Yes, bitter melon soup. Have you had it?
I have not.
I'll take you out for Chinese food one day. But you can't have it during the whole two-week period.
1 week from today, look for Mary Chow's piece. Where in the Democrat and Chronicle?
In the living section, the rock flavor section. I'll talk about some of the food traditions and as well as how to navigate a Chinese grocery store.
I always love the rock flavor section. So that's where you'll find it a week from today. And Mike on Twitter says, had to look it up. I'm a rabbit. Interesting. What does a rabbit mean, Mary?
Rabbits are an enigma in a sense because they seem a little bit calm, but you know about the whole tortoise and the hare, mm-hmm. So they're very cunning as well. So rabbits are a pretty good sign.
Okay. I'm still upset about being a sheep.
I'm not really that much of an expert on
every single animal.
Yeah. But I take it with a grain of salt. I'm pretty much Americanized, so I'm not that superstitious.
Sure. It would never have stopped you from bearing children in a certain year.
No, I didn't try to go for a dragon baby, which most Chinese families do.
You had a dragon baby?
No, I do not have a dragon. Okay. I have a snake baby.
You have a snake baby.
But Chinese families love the dragon signs, so you'll see the birth rates rise during dragon years.
And again, dragon's just one of the dozen, every dozen, right?
Right. But dragon is the most auspicious of all the signs.
Okay. So that's when it spikes in the dragon and it goes down in the sheep. And here I am, a sheep on Connections, hosting this show with Mary.
Hey, I'm worse. I'm a fire horse.
Fire horse. Again,
only once every 60 years.
I contend that is an anachronistic view of the fire horse. I think that means strong woman. That's what Mary is. Now, Asian grocers, for example, if you want to go out, you want to cook. And this is what I think is fun. And I think our audience views this with a lot of fun here. Learning about different cultures, mm-hmm. and trying new things, trying new flavors. That's part of what you're writing about. Mm-hmm. Take us through some of the dishes that we can be looking forward to.
I'll teach readers how to make a fish dish, which is very traditional in the new year. Fish means plenty to eat in the new year. And fish is fairly easy to cook, believe it or not. And all you have to do is prepare with a little ginger and soy sauce and oil, and it brings the flavors out. Incidentally,
what kind of fish? White fish?
White fish, mm-hmm. Anything like flounder or orange ruffy, so any kind of white fish. But incidentally, the Chinese food you have in the Chinese restaurants isn't real Chinese food. So the stuff we eat, that Chinese people eat, it's much lighter, much more flavorful. We let the flavors come out.
Now, hold on a second here. If we go to Chinese restaurants around here, you say that's not real Chinese food.
That's not real Chinese food. You cannot get sesame chicken in China.
Okay.
It's an American concoction.
But what has pushed it in that direction? There have to be some authentic Chinese restaurants, no?
Yes, there are authentic Chinese restaurants. There's actually a double menu. When I go in, I get a Chinese menu. I get a different menu. Chinese patrons get a different menu than the non-Chinese.
Is that right? Can you ask for?
Certain restaurants that cater to Chinese clientele, like Shanghai and New Cantonese, also in Henrietta, they have a large Chinese clientele. You can't ask for it, and you can't ask someone to explain it to you, but it's not that easy to navigate.
For you, I imagine.
For
you grew up there.
Exactly. For someone like who doesn't have a Chinese friend, it's not as easy. I would suggest, if you really wanted to try real Chinese food without having to go through the menu, go to dim sum on a Sunday. The two push cart dim sum places that serve really authentic dim sum are Shanghai, that's 2920 West Henrietta Road in Henrietta, and also New Cantonese, that's 85 Commerce Drive. It's in an industrial area that most people can't find, but that's where most of the Asians in Rochester go on Sundays to have real dim sum, real Chinese food. And you don't have to mess with the menu because they come around in push carts and you just look at things and point to things and you could just take it off the cart.
Now, to some degree, I think of Italian food. Most Italian restaurants mm-hmm. are not really Italian food. I mean, sometimes Americans tend to think that if a restaurant serves spaghetti and meatballs, it therefore is an Italian restaurant. And that's not right. But is that the same kind of thing with Chinese restaurants?
There's no resemblance. The Chinese food like sesame chicken and General Tso's chicken, there's no resemblance to real Chinese food. I talked to an Italian friend about this recently, and at least the Americanized Italian food, there's some resemblance to Italian food mm-hmm. in Italy. The flavors are just a little lighter in Italy. They wouldn't mixed meatballs and spaghetti is what I'm told. I'm not an expert on Italian food, but the Chinese American food bears no resemblance to real Chinese food that the Chinese people consume.
And so how did we get there? How did we get here?
From my reading, it was invented by the Chinese people who were in America, who tended to work in the kitchens, and they concocted dishes that Americans liked. The first Chinese restaurants that opened in the 50s here had a lot of the sweet and fried dishes that Americans like sesame chicken. I mean, who doesn't like deep fried chicken with a sweet sauce on it? It tastes pretty good.
But the next time I want to get something... next time I want to order Chinese food, I'm going to have to put air quotes around it. Because
it's Chinese American food.
Chinese American food.
Well, you know, incidentally, in Shanghai, a Chinese American restaurant opened because the expatriates missed their version of Chinese food so much that they couldn't
get out of here. That's funny. Yeah. For example, have you been to Asia Noodle?
Yes.
What would you describe Asia Noodle as?
It's okay. It's near my house. I go to Asia Noodle all the time. But it's Americanized Asian food. It's Asian fusion.
P.F. Chang's.
Asian fusion, but it's pretty good. I like the lettuce wraps.
Okay, so you don't view these restaurants with, you know, any sort of derision.
No, I don't view it with disdain. I like the lettuce wraps. I go to Asian Noodle all the time because it's near my house. It's fast. It's inexpensive. It's just different. It's different.
Okay. Talking to Mary Chow, a Democrat and Chronicle staff writer who's got a piece coming out 1 week from today on the Chinese New Year and food, tradition, customs. How much of the piece focuses on, is it mostly on food?
It's on food, yes. Okay, but it's on the food traditions.
Food traditions related to the New Year. So let's say it's Chinese New Year's Eve is a day too, right? I mean,
New Year's Eve, most of the families will stay home and make dumplings.
That's dumpling night. Okay. Mm-hmm. And dumplings is something we could find at Chinese restaurants around here, right?
I'm kind of picky about my dumplings. Most of the restaurants do not make their own skin. And when I'm lucky enough to be invited to Chinese parties, we have dumpling making parties, and it's an assembly line process. So you'll have a roll of mostly guys rolling out the dough and the women folding up the dough and gossiping and talking while they're making the dumplings. So it's a social event. You make dumplings an entire afternoon and we eat it all up.
That sounds like great fun. Mm-hmm. And so the dumplings that you get here are just a little more mass-produced?
More mass-produced. And the skin, you could get Wegmans. You can make mm-hmm. dumplings, Evan. It's the skin. It's the skin that makes a dumpling, for me anyway, for a real dumpling connoisseur. There's nothing like a homemade dumpling, which is hard to find here in Rochester. And even the restaurants, they tend to freeze it before they reserve it, so it's best to go to these dumpling parties. And I'll have to invite you to a dumpling party, too.
As long as you invite my wife as well. She would love it. We would both love it. And my wife is the kind of person who can grab a recipe that she's never done before, and she does it so well. So I hope she's listening now, because this sounds like so much fun as we kind of explore food. So Chinese New Year's Eve, dumpling night.
That dumpling night.
Chinese New Year Day. Is there any one? You talk about fish,
right?
So,
right.
But
oranges, tangerines.
Oranges? Okay,
it's a gold color. It's good luck, and anything sweet. There's a rice cake, niangao, which means higher year. So that's a lucky sounding food, niangao. Everything is tied to luck and prosperity during Chinese New Year.
Every food does seem to have a meaning.
Every food has a meaning.
Now, as you go throughout, it's 15 days in East Asia.
Right.
If it's not going to be 15 days here, do you condense the celebration? And in East Asia, is it a different sort of main course every single day? How do you do it there?
You go to different people's homes and different people serve different specialties. So I recall having a lot of fish during the 15-day period. Every house you go to, somebody has fish. And then somebody has noodles because it's long life. Everybody wants longevity.
How do you dress the noodles, though? Because here, the noodles are often pretty, sometimes pretty heavy.
It could be stir-fried with cai, which is vegetables. It could be served in broth. I mean, it's served a number of ways. Yeah, here it tends to be a little heavy and it tends to be sauce-laden. A lot of Chinese-American food is sauce-laden, and you won't find that as much in authentic Chinese food.
It's another interesting way. It has shifted. We see a lot of garlic here, garlic in Chinese.
Oh, yes, we love garlic.
All right, so that...
We love garlic, we love ginger.
Garlic and ginger, yeah. Well, that's great. And mm-hmm. You mentioned a whitefish dish, for example, that's just whitefish, ginger, soy sauce.
Soy sauce, oil, ginger, and scallions, and you're all set.
Very simple.
Yeah, exactly. Let the flavors of the food shine through.
What is a non-fish kind of dish that we might find?
Let me see. Think about that. Chicken, a lot of chicken, and duck. Those are Peking duck, for instance. That's very popular. Any kind of whole chicken. Those are popular during the Chinese New Year. So you have a lot of meats. Back in the old days, people didn't have a lot of money. And that's the one time of the year that you slaughtered your chicken or you slaughtered your pig to serve all these delicious dishes.
All right, we got a few minutes left with Mary Chow. So if we're going to try this, which would be, again, I think great fun, where do you shop for food here?
For Asian food, I shop at Wegmans, of course, but I shop at a lot of other grocers for Asian food. There's a Asian food market on Brighton-Henrietta Town Line Road that's in Henrietta, and there's also New Cantonese. It's attached to a restaurant, but it's also a grocery store. So on Sundays, people have dim sum. The Chinese families, they have dim sum, and then they'll go grocery shop. So those are the two Chinese grocers that I do go to. I do go to Korean grocers, too. There's a Chang's over on Mount Hope. And the Koreans also celebrate New Year. They call it Lunar New Year instead of Chinese New Year because obviously they're not Chinese, and so do the Vietnamese. And in Vietnamese, it's Tet. And there are Vietnamese grocers, too. But I tend to just stick to the two Chinese grocers that I know, Asia Food Market and also New Cantonese.
Anything that we need to know about navigating those food markets that, you know, might be different than what we're used to?
Well, be open to new foods. It can be intimidating because you'll find a lot of different sauces in Chinese that you don't know. If you don't know, ask. Produce is always a little bit different. You'll see the long string beans, and then you'll see the bumpy melon that's bitter melon. So if you don't know how to cook it, ask someone there, and they could help you.
How do you prepare bitter melon?
You make it in soup, bitter melon soup. It's
cold soup?
No, warm soup, hot soup. It's delicious on a cold winter day like today when it's 5 degrees outside.
And with chunks of melon?
And chunks of melon.
What else?
And a little bit of ham and broth. So it's very simple.
Wow. See, no, I have not had that. Very interesting. And when you say it's Chinese New Year, Tet in Vietnam, Lunar New Year in...
Lunar New Year in most of East Asia.
Most of East Asia. Is it celebrated roughly the same way? Or are there different traditions country to country?
I'm sure the traditions are different country to country.
15 days, though?
Pretty much. This is a big deal, Evan. I'm an expert on Chinese New Year.
We're not spending enough time on Chinese New Year. I feel like our celebrations have become too muted. But what's interesting is that Mary is telling us that, for the most part, things are roughly the same from what you understand from your childhood. That
businesses shut down and
they still
you go
do.
Visit your friends and family for 2 weeks. And maybe it's condensed now because I've pretty much Americanized, but in my childhood, you spent 2 weeks visiting friends and family and collecting money for me as a kid, which is pretty good.
Now, Mary, a question off air. Someone wanted to call in and ask, what's the percentage of Chinese people living in Rochester? I don't know the answer to that.
I think there are about 5,000 Chinese people here in Rochester. Between the Chinese and the Indians, we're the highest percentage of the Asian population here in Rochester. Chinese and the Indians very closely together in terms of numbers.
Okay, and I'm seeing just a couple of comments on Twitter roughly on restaurant recommendations. If you missed it, I'll ask Mary one more time before you go. People are asking about restaurant recommendations. She burst our bubble on Chinese food. Most Chinese restaurants, Mary's telling us, are serving food that's more fusion, that really isn't that authentic. But you can find more authentic, and if you had to go to two or three, you would choose?
I would go to Shanghai, and I would go to New Cantonese in Henrietta. Chen Garden has a more Chinese menu. A lot of Chinese people do go to Chen Garden. So those are the three. But I live in Brighton. I'm sure there are others in different areas that I probably missed.
And do you ever go back to where you grew up during Chinese New Year?
I have not. Not since my family re-immigrated. We moved back after a few months in this country the first time we tried to immigrate here. But no,
you were seven, right?
I was seven. And then after a few months, my family moved back. And we moved back again when I was 10. And we stayed here ever since. No, I have not gone back, but my parents have gone back.
Do you ever think about going back?
Oh, sure.
What's interesting to me is if it really is a two-week-plus celebration, that forces you to shed sometimes the strain of work, the day to day, and it forces you to kind of immerse yourself in friends and family a little bit. And because this is the country where we always say, oh, I haven't seen you forever. We've got to catch up. We've got to spend some time. And it seems to me that Chinese customs is every year you are going to make that.
That's it. That's it. Once a year, you're going to catch up with everybody.
Don't you feel like around here we always say, I haven't seen you in forever. Let's do lunch sometime.
Well, you know, Evan, we will do lunch. I'm going to take you to an authentic Chinese lunch.
I love it. Mary Chow, look for a piece a week from today. Anything else I missed on the piece? Largely food and fun and
food
tradition.
And traditions.
Well, congrats on that. And thanks for taking some time for us and enlightening us. Really, really interesting stuff. I guess do we say Happy New Year, right?
Happy New Year.
Happy Chinese New Year.
新年快乐.
I'm sorry.
新年快乐.
新年快乐.
Yes, that's Happy New Year. Or 恭喜发财, wishing you prosperity.
恭喜发财.
Yes.
Wishing you prosperity. Mary Chow, Democrat and Chronicle. And I'll see you again in the new year and later this year, I hope. Come back sometime.
Absolutely.
Let us know what you're doing with Rochester Flavors. Rock Flavors in the Democrat and Chronicle. Short break, and we're coming back. We're going to meet some students, third grade students, who are not just learning about alternative energy. They are trying to go off the grid. We're going to meet them in about 90 seconds. Welcome back to Connections. It's Education Friday. We now have a full studio, and I've told our guests, relax, get comfortable, get close to your microphones. We've got a full studio of great kids here, and I want to introduce them because we're talking about going off the grid. Sometimes when we talk about energy, we talk about what's changing, and solar options, etc., you think about the way we learn that. It's one thing to learn it and to read about it or to be instructed on in a school. It's another to actually try to do it. And at the Harley School, that's what they're doing. I want to introduce who we have on the microphones and also on the phone. Let me start with on the phone. We've got Chris Hartman, who is the Environmental Sustainability Coordinator at the Harley Independent School. Chris, are you there?
I sure am, Evan.
Well, in a second, I'm going to introduce a full studio, but give me a quick outline of what these students are doing.
Well, it's been an exciting project here. Like many third graders, these students have been studying electricity and learning about circuits and all of the various amazing scientific aspects around electricity. And as part of that study, they've been sort of adding some of the real world work associated with electricity. And they've been working to design their own lamps, build and construct those, and then wire them up within the classroom with the sustainability goal of utilizing solar power to light their classroom. So it's been a sort of a full hands-on project designed and run by the kids to set the goal of going off the grid in the classroom and build all the necessary infrastructure along the way.
All right. Well, in a second, we're going to learn a lot more about how far you've come there. Let's introduce who's in studio. Their teacher is Jeanette
Ottinger.
Jeanette, yes. Nice to see you. Thanks for being here. And in studio, I've got Cameron Stetzer. Cameron, say hello.
Hi.
Thanks for being here, Cameron. Bryn Butler.
Hello.
Hi, Bryn. And Max Herbison's here.
Hi.
How are you, Max?
Good.
All right. Well, a great group here. And Jeanette, we heard Chris talking about essentially going off the grid here.
Yeah.
How is it going?
It's going great. It's been such a fun experience right down to this very moment right here. But it's, you know, been bumps along the way, but it's a learning process. Our first day, there was no sun. What happened, guys?
It didn't work very well. And at the end of the day, our lamps were very dim because the sun eventually did come out, but not until about after lunch.
Yeah, it was almost day two that we were finally getting some full sunshine. So it's such a neat, authentic learning experience for us. And I'm learning right along the way with them.
Well, let me ask Max and Cam then, because you're just hearing from Bryn there. I love that Bryn just jumps right in over there. And let me ask Max and Cameron then, when we talk about learning for you guys, it'd be one thing if, you know, Mr. Hartman or Mrs. Ottinger were just teaching you guys about it. But Cameron, what are you learning by doing it? What do you feel like you're getting out of this experience?
Well, like learning how to be working on not using things that other people just made and actually just making it yourself and using what you've done.
How has it been difficult? How's it going?
Pretty hard. But when we mess up, we just find out by other people. So we just check out somebody else's and then like get an idea from them and then just use it on ours.
Max, same kind of question here. What are you learning? What would you say you've learned most out of this so far?
Well, I've learned that sometimes you can struggle because sometimes there's not enough sun. And over the days, our lights have been flickering a little bit because there's not enough sunlight. And sometimes people could step on a cord and then they could go off for a few minutes. But then we might have to fix that connection. But eventually it will work again.
Chris, when it comes to where we're going with this here, what's the long-term outlet for this? I mean, this is a very interesting idea, but is this a long-term project? What are you going to do with this?
Well, you know, certainly a significant part of the goal is to really just give the students the experience of, you know, kind of setting a goal, having a certain amount of challenge in front of them, and then working on the problem solving and the collaborative work to get through it. So it's, you know, we have very specific goals, short-term and long-term, around renewable energy and sustainable practices at the Harley School. But, you know, this project, it will be the case that we'll be dismantling our third-grade solar-powered grid in the not-too-distant future. We do have wires taped all over the floor and dangling this way and that way to make this 12-volt system work. So, you know, we'll be taking that infrastructure down, but the long-term goals of, you know, empowering students to be problem solvers, collaborative workers, you know, agents of change, we continue to look forward to giving them more opportunities to practice that and emerge as leaders in that way.
Jeanette, it's one thing for the environmental sustainability coordinator for the school to help lead this, but as a teacher, maybe not as expertly trained in this. What did you know about this before you got into
this? Well, it was interesting because this year we chose for a reading unit to start off the year with garbage. And they learned about the history of garbage. And then nowadays with recycling and just our renewable and non-renewable resources. So we started the year thinking about those things. So when we did our electricity unit, it kind of seemed natural to go into what can we use as a renewable resource and a non-renewable resource to make this happen. So the kids kind of came up with it themselves for solar power, which was neat. We kind of steered them in that direction. But we're not done. As soon as the grid comes down, we're going to be forming an opinion about solar power, doing some research, and then writing a paper on whether they think it is something they would consider doing or not doing based on that opinion.
And so, when are they going to have to draw those conclusions?
Probably after break.
After break, yeah. Which is next week's break,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's ask them now, though. Maybe they can give us a little preview. Bryn, if they're asking you what you think of solar power and, you know, whether you know what you're learning out of this, what do you think you'd say?
I think it's a really good idea for us to use this because we can do it for a long time. It's eco-friendly, and it can save us a lot of money.
Is that a program? I mean, that's almost a perfect answer.
Yeah, and you know, the kids found out just from this week alone how much money we saved. Do you want to say that, Max?
Look, he's got notes in front of him. This is great.
We all do.
Bryn said that you all do. I didn't even realize. Go ahead, Max.
We saved $15.48.
Hold on, get a little closer to the mic. Tell us again.
$15.48
mm-hmm. for both the classrooms.
Well, yeah, both classrooms.
And that's just this week?
Yep, just
in
yeah.
teacher hours. Because if we were doing stuff with the students, for the student hours, we would save $13.65.
Yeah, so the teachers committed to even those hours that were there long after the kids leave.
And again, so we're talking about 1 week.
Yeah.
If you imagine, over the course of a year, we're talking about a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
we have notes for that.
Bryn's got notes for that as well.
That's why we brought her.
I'm trying in my head to do the math to extrapolate out, and Bryn's like, I got it.
Yeah,
you know?
I know. You want to tell it?
If we use solar power all year, even through the summer, because the Horizon students are in our room sometimes, we would save $804.96.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes,
just in two rooms.
Just in two rooms. Yeah, that's serious stuff. So Cam, if you're writing a paper now and you don't have to write it yet, you don't have to draw that conclusion yet. What's your conclusion so far?
Well, I think it's like good that we're not polluting the air when we're using solar power, and we're not using all the other energy that we can make. Well, like, coal is limited, and we don't have, like, an infinite source of that. Like, yep. Sun's light, we have an infinite source of that.
It's really just, it's inspiring to hear third graders talking like this. It really is. And Chris, I'm trying not to gush too much, but seriously, these students are, they're absolutely aware of the difference. And you know, yeah. This may be a 2 week or a project or do it for a year, but you're planting a real seed there.
Yeah, no, we've been real proud of the students and really inspired by them as well, as far as the thinking. And what's nice to see about this, as Bryn and Cam and Max are showing you there, I mean, this isn't rocket science. A lot of the information that we've uncovered has that very similar feel to, you know, these choices about moving in sustainable directions, about living in more sustainable ways. You know, once you start to unpack things and really put the information out in front of you, the choices are pretty obvious and make a lot of sense, you know. So it's been informative, I think, for all of us to really dig into, well, how much electricity do we use and what does that cost and where does it come from and what are the alternatives? You know, it's really helpful to put in front of all of us. And like, again, Max and Cam and Bryn are showing you the choices that are sustainable seem like the really obvious choices to make.
Can I ask you a question that is dangerously close to a kind of a Harley softball, but I'm just going to ask you anyway, Chris? You know, in some sense, do you feel like you're educating students, but you're educating citizens here?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal of this. This project in particular is born out of the Commons, which is the new building that we've built at Harley, which itself is a sustainability center oriented in this direction. In fact, it's got a lot of solar panels on the roof, and as we did with the third graders, we can actually look at the live data on how much power we're producing at a given second, how much power we're consuming, obviously the net power associated with that. We can break it down to specific rooms, specific outlets, and really try and understand how we're using energy. And then the active work of, you know, putting ourselves in the driver's seat of managing that. I mean, where the goal of the Commons, just like this project with the third grade, is to put students in real and meaningful positions to understand the resources we're utilizing and how to manage that. So, yeah, that's got the goal of creating citizens, building communities, and building kind of sustainable futures. It's lofty, but as you can see in your studio there, it seems plausible.
Our guest for this half hour from the Harley Independent School, on the line with us is Chris Hartman, the Environmental Sustainability Coordinator there. Jeanette Ottinger is their teacher, the third grade teacher there, and three students, very impressive students in studio, Max Herbison, Bryn Butler, Cameron Stetzer, and Jake writes to the program with a question, and I'll kick it your way, Chris, and maybe this is an idea for a future experiment with the students. He writes, do the students do any experiments with hand crank or pedal generators? Even as an adult having studied electronics for more than a decade, nothing will give you a greater appreciation for energy like feeling how much human effort is required to light even a 20-watt light bulb.
That's a great idea and a great project. We've had some upper school physics students that have done that with the stationary bike. It went home with them, sadly. The one we do have some pedal powered shop equipment in the Harley Wood shop, which is a neat window into that. But kids, let's take note of that. I think that's a great idea of our next project.
They have a lot of energy.
Jake, you may think that they couldn't do that, but Bryn's, you got holding your hand up, Bryn. You want to jump in there? Go ahead.
I've lit up light bulbs before with a stationary bike at RMSC during summer camp.
How was it? Was it difficult?
Yes, it was difficult. Depending on how fast you paddled or how much effort you put into it, there was a giant cardboard shape that looked like a light bulb, and there was a lot of light bulbs in it. And at the top, there was rows of light bulbs. I don't know how many watts they had. Mm-hmm. And at the top, there was this one big red one. I think that means you have to use maximum power to get that to light up.
Yeah. What did you learn out of that experience, Bryn?
I learned that we could do things by energy, human power. That's how bicycles, skateboards, and scooters work.
But it's a lot of work though to generate a little bit of power, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, Bryn may have an endless motor, but that's a lot of work. Jeanette, this kind of goes to the broader question, though, of teaching by lecturing versus teaching by doing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach it?
Well, when we did our electricity unit, we always do it hands-on. You know, before I even start to talk about voltage, they're measuring the batteries, and they started with measuring the AAAs and the AAs and the Ds, and just making predictions and saying, well, I think this one's going to have more voltage. And so when they start to measure them, they realize it doesn't matter the size, they're all the same. So then we discuss, well, then what is voltage? If this battery is bigger, why is that not producing more voltage? So those are the kinds of questions that they come from themselves, and that is more of a teachable moment than me standing up there and saying, well, this is what voltage is. So that's kind of what we try to do at Harley.
Listener writes to the program. Josh says, this is awesome. And Josh is a dad. He says, are they doing anything to educate them on payback values of solar or renewables, cost versus return type stuff? I think that you began to touch on the value and cost savings. But Jeanette, any follow-up there?
Yeah, well, that's what our opinion piece is going to be. And we haven't even gotten to that yet. But from experimenting with solar energy from there, we are going to look at the pros and the cons. And, you know, they got to experiment with it once just by the fact that the day that we didn't have sunlight, we had less and less battery power throughout the day. So we're going to learn about, you know, what are the great qualities to solar power, and then maybe what are the disadvantages?
Chris, do you want to jump in and answer that as well?
Yeah, we had a few students, and this is one of the fun parts about this project as far as the various aspects that catch a kid's attention and what they get into. I mean, we have some, for example, elegant lamps, beautifully crafted and well decorated, and not that it's necessarily a different student, but we'll have somebody else at another table just really interested in crunching the numbers and seeing how this makes sense. So we with a smaller group, we did start to look at that figure you got there, the $800 or whatever dollars it was a year that we'd be saving. And we looked at our system, and I just kind of reviewed with them a little bit about what the different pieces cost, from the solar panels to the batteries and charge controller and whatnot. And for our little system, we were looking at about a two-year payback, which is far better than many existing, you know, real systems might return. But starting again to introduce that kind of thinking as far as, well, this is an investment, but what is the return on that investment, both financially as well as, you know, our values or the environmental stewardship goals that we have or whatever it might be, you know, what are the savings, as it were, or the value in that way. So we're starting to do that a little bit, but the jury's still out. We've got we're still trying to totally understand the various pieces that would make this work long term and try and make some guesstimations on what we think that would cost.
Chris, you mentioned the commons earlier, and we've talked a little bit about that on this program in the past, but give us another quick explanation for what the commons is at Harley.
Well, the commons is really Harley thinking a lot about education towards a sustainable future on a variety of levels. It includes a full kind of design thinking project, hands-on learning space, where a project like this third grade off-the-grid project would be born out of. And it gives real kind of diverse experiences and opportunities to students. It's got a pretty elaborate shop with CNC router machines and laser cutters, as well as just a hands-on durable space for third graders to hot glue gun lamps together and things like that. But it's got a few other floors associated with the building as well that sort of give what we like to think of as a kind of a holistic approach towards sustainability. So that also includes a center for civic engagement, a center for mindfulness and empathy education, and sort of adding to it thus the social aspects of sustainability as well, our ability to, you know, discuss and understand across difference and create consensus solutions. That's some of the work that we try and take on as part of our civic engagement area and advocacy work throughout the community. And then as well, the Center for Mindfulness and Empathy Education being a part of the educational experience, trying to be created as far as how do we care for one another? What does that look like? How do we practice those skills, understand those things? How do we take care of ourselves? Things like that. So the commons is really a facility and a set of educational programs that really is allowing Harley to think about education towards a sustainable future, really thinking about how we are able to provide kids with real and meaningful experiences to problem solve in that way, to work collaboratively in that way, and to really become leaders in that direction.
Jeanette, we've talked in recent months on this program about various educational approaches, and Chris just talked about empathy education.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe what empathy education is?
The ability to just walk in someone else's shoes. And believe it or not, when we get back from break, these kids are going to be working with people with different developmental disabilities, and we are going to be working on a dance together with people from the ARC. And that is kind of what we do at Harley with empathy, is we'll start off, they'll be a little bit nervous, and then all of a sudden they'll be in the same spot and our music teacher might make a joke and then everybody laughs because we realize, wow, we're more similar than we are. And that's when like their guards start going down and they start having fun. So I think each grade does it a little different, but we're always working on that in the classroom.
Let me ask the kids. We'll go around the room here. I'll start with you, Max. There's a lot of different subjects at school. What do you enjoy most going to school?
Well, I like science and social studies and reading, and one of my favorites is math.
Okay, and what about doing them at Harley do you like?
Well, at math, I've always liked math because I'm really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And at reading, when we've been doing our biographies, we've been doing fun stuff about the people that we have been studying. In science and social studies, we always study something different, and it's always something cool. Just like if, when we were doing the light bulbs, everybody would get excited when there's light. Because at first we just started with really simple light bulbs, and then we worked up to getting the whole class solar powered.
Yeah, that's very cool to see. Science is cool, isn't it? Is there, honest question, Max, is there, you and your friends, you think about science? Is science something that's cool to you?
Yeah, ever since I was little, I've always liked to be a scientist.
I love it. I think I agree with Neil deGrasse Tyson. Kids are born scientists, yeah. And we sort of take that away from them because their curiosity every kid is born with. So that's a great answer. Cameron, what do you love about going to school? What subjects?
Probably math, art, and science, because science and art, we just get to experiment and see what we can do. And, like, if it doesn't work, we just try it again. And then the thing I like about math is they always, like, you always think you can't do it, but then they just tell you, just try this. And then once they explain it to you and, like, they tell you what you're doing, it you understand a lot more, and then it just turns easy to you.
Very good. Bryn?
What I like about going to school, my favorite, is extra math on Thursdays. Instead of staying inside the classroom for recess, and recess, or going outside, I will go down with a couple of my friends to Mrs. Prister's room, and we will do academics with a basis on math. I also like reading and science because, like Cameron said, you just have to experiment to see what you can do. And I think Mom wants me to be a scientist when I grow up.
I love it. That's great.
Because I got things like color-changing crystals and bubbles that don't break.
Well, what do you want to do? Have you thought about, I mean, I don't want to put too much pressure on you. You're 8, I think. So, you know, but
yes.
You said your mom might want you to be a scientist. What do you think?
I really want to be a scientist because I enjoy making things and I love being wrong on estimates.
You love being wrong and then learning something new?
Yes.
That is such a great answer.
I also like reading because I could read at a very young age, and I just cannot stop reading. I just don't like going a day without books.
That is also great. And sometimes, Bryn, I'm just going to tell you from experience. I grew up loving reading. And I grew up sort of, you know, liking science. I had a chemistry set. But then I kind of grew up thinking, well, you gotta pick one or the other. You know, you're either going to be good at English and writing, or you're going to be good at math and science. You can do it all. And you're obviously doing it all. That's what I would just tell you. What do you think, Jeanette?
Absolutely.
We don't have to dichotomize this, right? Yeah. Like, kids can do everything.
You bet.
Is there a risk, Chris, that sometimes we do grow up with that mentality that, well, this child will be good at math, this child will be good at reading, this child will be good at science, and instead of saying, you know, it's a blank canvas.
Yeah, no, I think we do. And don't get me wrong, there's unbelievable value to what we've been able to do specializing in things and the depth of knowledge we're able to gain and all the rest of it. But obviously, particularly at this age, it's a really important and really valuable thing to be able to pursue all of those different interests and really let them leverage one another. I mean, in third grade, math and reading are such interactable skills in the right setting, and they really do work wonderfully together. So, we're big Renaissance pushers, particularly in the third grade.
Well, and let me ask their teacher this. We got three students here who obviously like science and talking about being scientists. And I reference the fact that Neil deGrasse Tyson likes to say every person is born a scientist because we have curiosity about how the world works, and that basically makes you a scientist. And then eventually you get too rooted to a desk and maybe some of that curiosity goes away over time. As a teacher, how do you make sure that curiosity gets burnished?
I think it's just, it comes from the passion of the kids, the passion of the teacher. I think just following that, and each year it looks different. And I think it's because each year we have a different group of kids. And if you're good at knowing and reading your kids, you can spark that within them.
Well, obviously we're seeing that. And congratulations to all of you guys. It sounds like this is just a great set of projects you've been working on. Chris, before I let you go, you want to give us a sense for what we're going to talk to you about next?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the great aspects of the Commons is, it's not just about our ability to provide a great education to Harley students. We're really excited about and really actively trying to connect to the community more broadly. Rochester is, as you know well, Evan, doing all kinds of amazing work around sustainability and faces some pretty significant challenges socially and environmentally, and we look forward to working with the community and partnering in a variety of different ways and being part of positive change. And so what I hope to be next with a group of students is how we're moving outside of the classroom, outside of the Commons, and out into the community to partner up and work with other people with similar goals in this way.
Really interesting stuff. Chris Hartman is the Environmental Sustainability Coordinator at the Harley Independent School. And Chris, congratulations on this project. I'm sure we will talk to you again.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot, Evan.
And thanks to our panel here. Jeanette Ottinger, their third grade teacher. I don't know, you got to be amazed just about every day, aren't you?
It's fun. It's always an adventure. I think that's what's great about teaching at Harley.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come in. And I'll go around the room and thank them all individually. Bryn Butler, thank you, Bryn. Great meeting you.
It's been a wonderful time doing this.
I almost had you speechless for the first time. That's awesome. Yeah. Bryn's awesome. Cameron Stetzer, great to meet you. Thanks very much.
Great to meet you, too. I had a great time, so.
Well, come back and tell us what your next big project is. Max Herbison, also a third grade student. Thank you, Max. Great talking to you.
Thanks.
Congrats, everybody. Really, really cool stuff at Harley as they go off the grid, learning in a very hands-on way. Great week here. John Andrus. I always love Education Friday when I've got an educator behind the glass. John's giving us a thumbs up. He's not only a great engineer, but education background. Had a lot of fun today. Thanks for listening to member-supported public radio. We'll talk to you Monday on Connections.